Hello guys, welcome to the Black Spain Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
I'm Eugene.
And welcome to day seven at US Open. And today we are joined by Anastasia from Ground Pass, friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
Hello. Hi. I'm good. It's been a long day. Yeah, long day on the ground.
What time did you arrive?
So I was here. I didn't come early enough. If you could, I was here about noon, 11:45.
You still came
earlier than us.
But no, it was chaotic in the morning because of the weather. It was raining, so everyone was trying to get onto Louis Armstrong. And
was it raining heavy here?
No. Oh, it was just it? You know, it was just a little bit. So they stopped all the matches on the outside courts.
Oh, I had no idea.
But because the only court that Ground Pass holders could go to is Louis Armstrong, the line was, it went all the way to the fountain.
Oh wow. Is that why there was a queue when we came in?
Probably. Yeah.
Was it today when we came in? I was like, why is there a queue?
Why are they queuing?
Yeah, and I thought, I was like, what's going on? Okay.
Also, shouts out to you, Anastasia, because I love the whole rebrand of Ground Pass.
Yes,
thank you.
And also your photography skills, like, unbelievable.
Well, I'm trying. I'm trying to get better. I was actually telling a friend the other day, I was like, I need to take photography classes.
Because were those so pictures you took of Young and Townsend, was that on your phone?
Yes.
Damn.
Yes, that was on my phone.
Incredible.
That was on my phone. So
do you have a camera?
No, not yet. I have a little video. It's almost like a GoPro.
Yeah.
I have that, but all my, the pictures I take, it's on my phone.
Damn.
Oh.
So if anyone's trying to start anything, just start with your phone. You don't need any crazy equipment.
No, for real.
But I do want to upgrade and learn more and stuff. But yeah, thank you.
We should get into it because it's late here. But I think, we should mention again, Queen Serena was also on the ground today.
She was.
Second day in a row. Cheering on Grigor Dimitrov, who was playing Andre Rublev.
Yeah. I'm really surprised by that result, by the way. I really thought Rublev would win in five.
Really?
You know him. Him and long sets is like...
Yeah.
It's like he's allergic to straight sets, honestly speaking.
Also, Alicia Keys is in the house too. Big fan of Alicia Keys.
Hey.
Spelled her name wrong
there. She's a true NY babe.
She is. She is New York, isn't she?
She is New York.
Is she born or she...
I think she is born in New York, but also she's doing a little... So she has a play going on.
Nice.
And I heard that is really good. Like, I've heard nothing but positive stuff about it.
Yeah, the play is really good.
The play is about her story, but in a way of like, it's not just so focused on her. Like, I'm pretty sure that people went to watch it, even though it's Alicia Keys. Sorry, but yeah, I've heard.
So
whether it's critics or
in it or she's
yes, she
it.
Stars in it. She, you know, she's producing it as well.
Yeah.
But also for the Open, she made an original song. That is sort of a combined, I can't remember what it's called now, but I think also that's why she was here today.
Yeah.
But for opening day, they sort of played her original song on TV and things like that for the Open.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was a great collab.
But obviously Serena was also present at Coco Gauff's match, which is where we're going to start.
Trying Honey Deuces.
Was that her first time trying it?
Apparently, which I'm just like, how?
You don't know.
I believe it. Like,
yeah.
Anastasia's not buying it.
I believe it, but because for instance, when Taylor won at Wimbledon, she said that she got lit quick because she hasn't been drinking alcohol. Because
these are
athletes.
They're athletes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's not like they can drink and then tomorrow go back. You know, type of thing. So I can, especially someone like Serena, who was, I think we forget, this woman was living, breathing, sleeping tennis. Like it was all tennis till, you know, she became a mother and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I definitely can believe that she's been here since 1999 and I've never drank Honey Deuce till now. Like, I personally could actually believe it. And not just because it's Serena, but I would believe any of the tennis players that will come and say,
I've never tried
a Honey Deuce.
Yeah,
I like, to me, it's believable, whether it was Serena or not. So I hope she enjoyed it. I tried it the first time yesterday, before yesterday.
Oh, and?
It was okay. It was good. not worth $23.
Have you tried the frozen one yet?
See, that's the thing. Oh, I purposely did not want to try the frozen one yet because I wanted to have like a real... I know the, everyone says go for the frozen
one. Yeah, go for the frozen one.
I will say it did kick my ass real quick.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then maybe don't do the frozen one because that will take you out.
No, that means I have to do the frozen one, Anastasia. You're not focusing here. Come on. So yeah, when we're done US Open, ready to celebrate, Eugene didn't want to drink. He was like, don't drink on the job, being a boring grandpa.
Stop it.
I like to have a little bit of fun. And I'm still working. True. Am I not giving you guys a good pod? Well, well edited, good audio and stuff? Exactly.
Yes.
So let's get to it.
She can do both.
I can do both.
Indeed.
Thank you.
But back to the tennis, which is why we're here. Coco Gauff fell to Emma Navarro. So that match was second on Ash. Tough. It was a tough watch at times.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, where should we start? Like, for me, it felt similar to the Cicilline match in terms of Navarro starting the better. But I thought Coco was also playing quite well as well.
Okay.
And in the second set, I think Navarro, she broke first. And I can't remember where Coco broke. But she broke at a time where she was able to serve for it.
What, on the second, the first set?
Yeah. No, the second set.
The second set.
Did she serve it or did Navarro?
I don't know. So
No. It was
She served for it.
But she nearly got broken by Emma.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But the serve kind of was the theme of the match in terms of Coco was struggling on serve.
That was the main issue.
I think she had 20 or 19 double faults.
Wow. Wow.
And so, it was a tough kind of watch, to be fair, at times.
Yeah. I didn't watch this match because I was on a different court, so I actually have questions for you because I watched the Wimbledon match, which you did too.
Yeah,
so how did this compare to that? Because I think in the Wimbledon match, just watching it, it was hard to watch because you saw how frustrated she was, she kind of let it get to her.
Yeah.
Was that the same thing here, and then she lost her serve, or?
To me personally, I would say no, it wasn't the same thing. It's weird because at the beginning of the match, I kind of felt like, oh, okay, this is actually already better than what we were seeing at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's tough is because when you, in terms of numbers and stats, I can understand if someone says this was even worse than Wimbledon.
Mm.
But to me, it kind of wasn't because of the fact that once she did play, serves aside, she'd played better.
Okay.
She, at times, returned better. Because that was the thing. Her serves were not only the issue. Like, it was also she was unable to return back to whatever Emma was hitting. And at one point when she actually did, she broke her.
Yeah.
Do you get what
okay.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of like her mentality and problem solving, it was way better than that match at Wimbledon. Like at Wimbledon, it was like she was shouting at her boxer, even her boxer didn't even know what to do on. But I can understand. I won't argue it with someone if they said this was worse than even at Wimbledon. But for me personally, it wasn't because aside from the serve, she did do better. But there was something she had to improve on. But the serve did cost her. You know, some people were even mentioning a forehand, but she was hitting that forehand really well. And it's funny that, you know, everyone was talking about that because Serena was asked about that when she was interviewed by the ESPN, and I believe she was interviewed by Mary Jo, and she literally she said to Mary Jo, like, listen, I actually think her forehand is fine, she just needs to have that confidence in it. And it goes back to what I was saying to Eugene on the US Open preview, like, and I think I've said this my second time even saying it during this slam, is that we are so spoiled by the older players where their working ability was off the roof. Do you get what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Their confidence was different. And I think that's the way it is. A lot of us transformed from being a Serena fan to a Coco fan.
Yeah.
And we are so used to seeing that beast in Serena. And I'm not saying these other players don't have that confidence, but for me, I feel like no one has it in the level of Serena or even some of the other big threes. And that's the same with the ATP players.
Yep.
So, like, for example, there's this funny tweet going around by Shanks. Shout out to Shanks. where it's Matteo and Carlos at the F1.
I saw it.
It's like, you see, the older players, they'll be in confinement to the end of tournament, and these people are out here gallivanting around. And do you get what I mean? Like, in a way, I do like the fact that the players of today are not too hard on themselves, because, you know, it's at the end of the day, like, you need a good work-life balance, but we need to remember the difference that makes.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So, I mean, if Coco had a little bit more of that confidence and did fix that serve, she 100% would have won that match in three. And that's why, for me, I felt like she would have won that in three, even like going into it, because you could see her confidence in her previous match. She was really doing well, like she was pushing through, like, you know. And I mean,
Eugene, what do you think? You know, it's a shame she lost this match. Mm-hmm. I think this whole year has kind of been a little, you know, maybe not the year she expected. What would you do, Eugene, if you could coach Coco? And that's not the question I'm asking, but what do you see as something that she can do? Because it was interesting, you guys shared the transcript of her press conference with me, and I was reading it, and, you know, people were asking, for example, would you bring in a specialist for a specific thing to come help you, you know, with your serve, for example? Do you think that's something? It seemed like it was something that she was open to.
I mean, to be fair, that's a great segue. Let's play that, what she said, right here, actually.
I mean, for sure. I definitely want to, like, you know, get other opinions. Because, you know, I think it's sometimes more of an emotional, mental thing, because if I go out on the practice court right now and make, like, 30 serves in a row, I've done it before. So I think it's also just kind of a mental hurdle that I have to get over when it comes with that. But, yeah, I definitely want to look at other things, because I don't want to lose matches like this anymore.
So, yeah, like, she basically says she's open to it. And I know, Lucy, you were happy when you heard that. For me, like, the serve, the way it broke down, it kind of fed into the rest of her game. So, and she said in press as well that it's just a confidence thing. Because she was like, oh, if she was to go back out onto the practice courts now, she'll be able to hit like 19 first serves in a row. Like, so it is literally just a mental thing. I don't know, like, how... I don't know, like, I think it's just a thing of playing more matches and just trusting yourself, because... Yeah. She's more than capable of hitting, like, good quality first serves. I mean, when she first broke onto the scene, like, she was serving pretty big against Venus Williams. I was like, bloody hell, this girl's, like, 15 years old and she can serve, like, 120. Like, what the hell? So, like, she's got it in her. But, yeah, for me, it's just a confidence thing. And I think that will just come in terms of the more matches she plays, and maybe... at the latter stages of tournaments too, like the Grand Slams. Even at the US Open last year, she arguably didn't play her best tennis, but she was able to find a way to win.
Yeah.
It didn't quite happen here this year, unfortunately for her, but I do kind of feel like she also played her way into form, because coming in, she had like one win, I think, on the hard courts after the Olympics. So... yeah, I think overall it's been a good tournament. Of course, she didn't defend the title, but she's reached the second week at the US Open, and now she's reached the second week at all the Grand Slams as well this year, which I think that's an achievement, and something we always kind of say on the pod, like, she's 20 years old, like, she's a young player, like, still developing. And I love what Emma Navarro said as well during her on-court interview. She was like, oh, you know, Coco's a great player, and, like, she's going to win loads more of these things, because that's kind of what people see in her.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that really answers your question, but...
No, yeah. It's a good answer, for sure. I think, you know, I really did like that section of her interview, because I believe it's good for players. Like, even if it's something you're not specifically bad at or whatever, working on certain things like that. I think, you know, when you see players like Aryna Sabalenka, who was double faulting her way to losses, and completely turned that around because she got like a specialist. So I'm interested to see what Coco does, if she does bring someone in, or if she just chooses to work with her current team on the things that are difficult for her. Because I think a confident Coco is a winner.
100%.
Like she just, it's so crazy how she can almost will herself to winning. And I love seeing when she's confident. And I think if you have the technicalities, that even, I mean, if she has the technicalities and that confidence, watch out. It's over. It's over for everybody. So, yeah.
I have a question to ask you, and I'm just going to put you guys on the spot. Do you think she needs to get rid of Brad or not? Because that's the thing that people like to say the most. What do you think, Anastasia?
So, I do think Brad Gilbert was a good addition last year. Like, I think it was really, really... I don't know what he said, winning ugly. I don't know what he did. But I think that injection of difference helped. At the same time now, I think sometimes sameness and the same thing over and over again, you know, repeating the same thing, might not work anymore. She might need something different. I'm not saying, you know, Brad is not the person. Maybe he just needs to refocus the way he talks to her or coaches her or anything like that. And, you know, so, and I don't know how you guys feel about this. What has actually been getting me a lot these days as I was on court watching Aryna Sabalenka being interviewed by Jannik Sinner's coach is this sort of conflict of interest in my mind.
Wait, Jannik Sinner's coach, he does the on-court interviews like...
Darren he did it, he Darren Kelly, Cahill, ESPN, yeah, for ESPN. So he was doing it tonight. And, you know, I've seen Brad Gilbert on ESPN.
Yeah.
And for me, so what I did see online was Brad Gilbert on ESPN right after. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it had to be minutes.
Yeah.
Talking about it.
Yeah.
And... for me, there is a bit of conflict of interest there because, you know, so I know someone said this online already, but if that was me, I'm like, nah, no, no.
I feel like it's a bit tough in that thing because, you know, a lot of people always say when it comes to coaches that it should stick to being coached. A lot of people say that with Patrick, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
And in my head, I'm like, it's a bit unfair because they still got mouths to feed.
No, totally.
They still have things to do.
Yeah.
So I understand, but I do agree. I feel like there should be a limit. I feel like there should be, like, that for example, part. I feel like at least, for example, doing a Grand Slam, no. Mm-hmm. Or at least if, let's say, okay, Coco now was out. Now that she's out, you can commentate as much as you can. Do you get what I mean? Or when she's, while she's doing her press conferences, after you do like the next day, you know, the off day, like, hey, this is what happened. But the fact that it's happening like a minute after, because obviously ESPN, they're trying to get their ratings, to get their things. So I understand for them sides is what it is, but I do agree. Like, I personally don't believe in the whole like, yeah, the coach should not do any sort of blah blah blah, because at the end of the day, this is another way, another form of content. There's another thing that can get people going to the sport, and I think it's still great. I just think they need to probably reevaluate how they do it so that it doesn't mess up, you know, the whole... Yeah, it's just... But I definitely agree. Like, obviously, we don't know how quick it happened, but I did see a lot of those tweets, like a lot of people, you know, saying those type of things and saying that... how can he just be, you know... And I'm pretty sure Brad is saying those things that he's saying on TV to Coco. But, yeah, it's just...
And I am completely in agreement with you when you say coaches should be able to do, do all things. Like, you can be commentators. You can do all the things.
Yeah.
I just think there needs to be some sort of limit.
100%.
And here, I always like to say these two. It's like, I'm not Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
She might not care.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually very true.
She might just be chill with it. But on the from the outside looking in, it just reeks a little bit of conflict of interest. But
What do you think, Eugene?
Yeah, what do you think, Eugene?
No comment. Nah, you have to say it. We've all put our opinion.
I feel like, honestly... It's not. I just don't feel like I'm in a position to kind of tell a player what they should or shouldn't do. When it comes to their coaching setup.
Okay. But is it just an opinion? What do you think? Like, this is a popular topic.
Last year I didn't like the fact that Gilbert was getting so much praise.
Oh, okay.
Like, because I thought, you know what? He's not out there on the court. It's Coco playing. And, like, I was like, listen, let's not kind of confuse the narrative. Like, the praise should go to the player. And yeah. I just thought too much attention was being put on Brad Gilbert. But I understand, of course, he has a history. Like, he was with Andy Roddick when he won. Mm-hmm. So, being the last American man, like, and obviously the book, Winning Ugly, like, it's a bestseller and all that. Like, I get it. But, yeah, that, for me, last year, it did make me feel uncomfortable. Looking to where we are now, I think it's a great point you make, Anastasia, about the whole conflict of interest thing, because that is... That needs to be looked at, because it's... Even if Coco is okay with it, which I'm sure she is, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
So, I feel like even for Brad Gilbert too, like, clearly he's making money, like, and that's that's his, like, prerogative. He's entitled to do that. But I don't know, surely he must feel a little bit uncomfortable as well. Like, kind of, your player's just lost and you're...
and you're on ESPN.
Yeah, like, minutes later. Like, it's just weird. So... I don't think that answers your question.
You're not. You're actually not. Like, you're really not. It's a simple, but yeah, you know.
I don't feel like she needs to let go of Brad Gilbert. I think she's talented enough to kind of figure this out, in terms of, like, she has the ability. And something, again, I always say, like, I'm never worried, like, whenever she loses a match, because I trust that she's going to basically find a way, whether it's the next tournament or within the next few months. Like, we've still got a long time to kind of play until the end of the season as well. Like, yeah, there's still a lot of tennis to be played. So,
I mean, she did say that, you know, she hasn't really, she's probably thinking of probably doing, like, some training block, yeah, and stuff.
Okay.
A big training block and stuff, because, you know, she hasn't done one in a while since, like, around the French Open and stuff. So she's thinking of doing that. So, yeah, I mean, during the press conference, she did look positive. Like, she's matured a lot.
You can tell she was upset.
Of course, yeah. But I'm saying, like, she's still, like, she kept it positive. I wonder if she kept it positive. She kept it more of, like, okay, I know I need to focus. I know I need to make some changes. It's like she knew already, like, every answer she gave a vibe of, I know what the issue is. I just need to sort it out and fix it, because it's getting ridiculous now.
Yeah.
So that is why I felt really proud. I think, aside from Brad, it's either, for me personally, I feel like it's either get rid of Brad and bring back Perry Reba, or keep Brad but maybe get, like, a psychologist, or, like, you know, a bit like what Iga has or Sabalenka has, and so on. I think maybe that will help, because really and truly I feel like it is really more mental than anything else. And I don't feel like I'm not saying that Coco doesn't have that mental strength, because one thing that I feel like she's actually proved to us this tournament so far is that when it's time to build up, she did it, because she did it so brilliantly, especially on her last round. Like, I was watching, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Like, she was down and she came back up quickly, and she stayed strong. She told the crowd to, you know, she told the crowd, like, yeah, come on, stand up, make some noise. You get what I mean? Yeah. So I feel like she just needs... She even said it herself in that press conference that we just played right now. Like, you know, maybe she needs to hear something a little bit different. Maybe, like, you know, you just never know. But either way, I'm really proud of her, what she's done, because coming into this slam, I mean, some people didn't even think she'll probably even gone past the second round, yet alone even the first round.
Yeah.
And she's proved a lot of people wrong. Mm-hmm. And she lost against an opponent that was playing really well. So credits to Emma as well.
We need to give Navarro credit.
100%.
Like, I thought she played an amazing match.
For sure.
Yeah. I feel, I forgot how young she was. She's 23 years old.
I had no idea.
I was really impressed with, like, her forehand today, like, and her movement too, as well. Like, she's a really, like, I say, low key good mover. Like, she. And I have you watched much of her tennis? Or
I didn't really start watching her until she played with Ben Shelton. at Indian Wells, okay, that sort of mixed event that they had. It was like an exhibition mixed event, and I'd heard of Emma Navarro. I'd seen some of Scores and whatever, but I'd never watched her play, and I thought, who's this person? She's so quiet. But then you watch her hit the ball and you're like, oh, where did that come from? Because she doesn't really celebrate. She, exactly. You know, she's very demure. I had to do it. And so that was sort of the first time. But ever since then, I have been following her matches. And she's good. You know, she is a good player. Yeah. And she's also someone who I think became a good player. Like, I don't think she started out playing this well. Yeah. And I don't know what she did over the last few years. Just, like, she looks different. If you look at old...
She came through the college system as well, didn't she?
Yeah, but she looks completely different. Her game looks different. Because I did go back and see some old matches, and I was like, that's not the same person. Yeah. So I love what she's done this year. She's top 10 now? I think she just entered the top 10 with this match, so it's kind of crazy. So definitely a good player, not a bad loss in my opinion.
For sure.
And I think, like you said, Coco knows what she needs to do, and already, you know, it's interesting she mentioned working on, you know, the mental a little bit with that serve, but I think she has a great mentality on court. She's a fighter. Mm. So she'll get over this.
Definitely.
You know, this is just a blip.
Definitely. Should we talk about a win now?
Yes.
So Francis Tiafoe,
big foe.
20th seed. Got the job done against Alexei. Is it Alexei or Alexei?
Alexei.
Alexei.
I think.
Okay.
Alexei.
Alexei Popperin. Who actually beat Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, he did. Shout out to Popperin. Held it down.
He really did. But yeah, today, Tiafoe, wow. Or tonight even. Like, just really rose to the occasion, I thought.
Yeah.
Great atmosphere on Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he loves it out here. Like, that's probably his favourite court.
Mm.
So this is his third consecutive US Open quarterfinal.
Isn't that crazy?
That's
I saw that stat and I was like, whoa.
Insane.
The other people on the stat, by the way, are Agassi, Sampras, and Roddick.
Big hits.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then Francis Tiafoe. That is pretty...
All US Open winners apart from Tiafoe. Will that change this year?
Well. Tennis gods, hear us out.
So I actually got to watch a lot of this match. So after the Sabalenka match, I came outside of Louis Armstrong and there's a screen there.
There was just
a crowd of people. So I joined them and
there's
a screen by the fountain, but there's a screen right outside of Louis.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. on the building. Yeah. And we just all sat there and watched the match. So I got to actually watch a lot of it.
Oh, nice.
And it's crazy. He loves Ash.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure he loves the person, but he loves that court. And it's so interesting to me that someone can, depending on the location, raise their level that much. And the crowd loves him. And it was incredible because you were in Ash, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like? I mean, did you notice? Because on TV, Popperin just looked like it was too much, a little bit. Like, in the third set, obviously, he came back. Yeah. But there were moments there where I just think the Ash is a big court. It's a big space. And he didn't look as comfortable and flowy as Francis Tiafoe.
I will say, to be fair, I think compared to a lot of other players, he handled the crowd really well.
Mm-hmm.
There was some moments, but not as much as I've seen some from other people.
Yeah.
And there was some Australian shouting there. I heard some Australian shouting oi. So and to be honest, I mean, I feel like a lot of players kind of expect it anyways. Coming in, you're facing an American, Arthur Ashe, a night session. I bet he was upset when he thought it was a night session. I think if it was day, it would have been probably like more chilled,
especially that
you're going from the crowd cheering for you like crazy because you beat Djokovic to now like a complete flip. But to be fair, at times he did get a crowd behind because Popper in that time was playing some crazy shots that, you know, some people were written for Tiafoe was like, oh shoot,
like,
yeah.
yeah Yeah.
It was really high level from both. So I will give him credits for being, like, there were some uncomfortable times, but it wasn't as bad as, like, I've seen some other people, they've not been able to handle it properly at all. But I think he did well, to be honest. I think he handled it well. But honestly, that match, like, that first set especially, oh my gosh, it was just magical. Like, it was really good. I thought initially that it would be hard for Francis to break him because he was serving really big, really strong.
They both were serving quite well, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah, but Popperin is like, he's kind of, I don't want to say it, but he's kind of a serve bot in a way.
Okay.
So, I mean, see, this is why I don't like using the term serve bot, because sometimes it comes as a bad thing, because
he's
like...
He's a big server.
Yeah. But I feel like at the beginning of the match, he was relying a lot on his serves. It was towards the end where he wasn't as much and he was hitting some really nice shots. Mm. But because of those big serves, especially that first set, I was like, oh, this might go to a tiebreak. But, you know, the one time, once Frost was able to return back well and stuff, like, he was able to break. But breaking each other anyway. But like you said, they were both serving well because they kind of had, like, the around the same amount of break points, especially during each set. Like, it was really close a lot of times. But honestly, first credit to Popperin as well. But Francis was just, like, I was watching it, I was just like, I might cry. Like, this is beautiful. Like, when Francis is locked in,
yeah,
it's like one of the best thing to, like, watch ever. And because he has that energy and the crowd's behind him and everything, like, it just makes it even more exciting. So you're watching good tennis and you're also getting, like, you know, really pumped up. Eugene had him winning in three. I had him winning in four.
Okay.
Because I was like, listen, if you just beat Djokovic, you're gonna come in.
You
a
have
different
to come
smoke.
In. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I really enjoyed the match. It was really good.
Before the match, who did you have winning?
Oh, Francis.
And how many sets?
Oh, I don't.
You don't do that.
I don't. Yeah. Okay. I'm really bad with predictions and things like that because tennis.
Exactly.
I mean, anything can happen. There's just something about New York and Francis Tiafoe. I just did not see him losing that. I did a podcast yesterday with a friend, and with Novak out, with Carlos Alcaraz out, they're the Americans right now.
Yeah,
it's like because he was saying how did they wake up the next morning that when Novak was out? I mean, they must have woken up being like, it could be me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, because also I watched Taylor Fritz, absolutely, again in four, beat Casper Ruud. And, you know, he dropped the first set and he came back in three and you could see the fire. And I was like, ooh, that fire is Grand Slam time. You know what I mean? And Francis has been saying that for years, that this is the slam he's going to win.
Yeah.
And this is his opportunity.
Yeah.
You look at that draw,
and
you can't help but get hopeful.
Can you imagine?
And not just the draw, it's just the way he's just played. Like, he came into this tournament just different, you know.
Completely
but,
different.
Sorry to cut you off, but I can't, like, honestly, can you imagine? I was speaking, there's times where I'm sitting and I'm thinking, like, guys, I'm actually going to cry if this actually happened. I'm not joking. Like, I was thinking, I was like, this is going to be too big. Like, Francis at US Open, Arthur Ashe. Like, we have not had a black man winning a Grand Slam for such a long time.
Since the
80s. Hello?
Yeah.
And winning that at your home slam is just on Ashe.
It's wild.
Yo. Yeah.
Back on Fritz at the stage, you're like, because I was saying as well, like, Tiafoe, he's not even the highest ranked American. Mm-hmm. So it's Fritz, Shelton, Paul, and then Tiafoe.
I think it's Fritz, Paul, Shelton.
Okay.
And because he lost his points from the US Open. Then Tiafoe now.
Because Fritz, for me, he's not drawing that same kind of energy on Ash.
No. I don't think so. But I also don't think that's his vibe.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen him play on Grandstand at this tournament. I've seen him play, not this exact one, but I saw him when he lost that first round on Grandstand. I've seen him play on Louis, and I think that's just his vibe. He's not as, like, Francis is a showman. He needs a big stage to, like, present himself. So that I'll say that for sure, but at the same time, if I walk the streets and I say Francis Tiafoe, Big Foe, people know who that is.
100%.
If I walk the streets and say Taylor Fritz, they're going to have to think about it.
Yeah.
Just I'm just being honest with it. Well, yeah.
Like Shelton's becoming that kind of guy.
Oh, yeah, well. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I think that's, a testament to them.
Yeah.
And, like, what that's going to do for the sport, what that is doing for the sport. Like,
it's massive. And that's the thing. He hasn't won yet.
Exactly.
And this is what he does for the sport. Mm. Imagine if he wins. It's over. It's different.
Back to TFO today. Like, obviously, he started really well. So, winning that first set, like Lucy said, it was very close on serve. Both were serving pretty well. And then it got to 4-all, Popper, and kind of, I guess, he kind of crumbled a bit. And then, yeah, TFO took advantage, served it out, 6-4. Second set was up and down. I think Popperin broke first. I thought, oh, we're going to lose him here. Like, we're going to lose this set. And basically, we're heading into a third. And it's like, even Stevens. TFO was like, no, I'm actually going to lock in. And the way he did, I knew from when he won that second set, I was like, yeah, he's going to win this match. Even though he went on to lose the third, I was still confident. Because Popperin was playing well throughout. Yeah. In that third set, TFO's level dropped.
Mm.
And I think Popperin even kind of said that as well, like in his first press conference. And in the fourth set, literally anyone could have won that. Because again, TFO was playing better, but Popperin was also playing quite well. But I think the moments in terms of TFO now, and it kind of goes back to the Cincinnati run where he made the final. Like, these big matches, he just seems much more like just locked in, and it's a thing of, it gives you a lot of confidence watching him, because you're like, he's gonna figure out a way like to pull through.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying about match wins. Like, it gives you so much confidence. Like, and the preparation he had in Cincinnati to come to the US Open now and do what he's doing, like, that's proof of that for me. So yeah, kind of looking ahead now to Grigor Dimitrov, I'm looking forward to that match.
Oh yeah, I am, and that's why I really wish I got. The conference got kind of rushed towards the end. I really wish I got to ask him how he was looking forward to that match, because he lost Dimitrov in straight sets. But I'm not worried at all, because the Tiafoe that we're seeing right now, and it's funny because I was sending to Eugene yesterday that I feel like Popper is going to come into this match underestimating the level from Tiafoe.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like a lot of the players going to be looking like, oh, he's... This is the issue. I kind of feel like when it comes to the black male players, they stereotype them. Mm. So with Monfils and with Tiafoe, they kind of make it seem like it's all about the show. Mm-hmm. They either say the show or call them great athletes, which they do with all black players, you know, anyways. They call them great athletes. Or the women players are always compared to Serena. They could breathe and be like, oh, Serena did this in 2006. Do you get what I mean? So I kind of feel like a lot of the ATP players are going to come into each match and be thinking, oh, he has a crowd, that's why he won. No. He has a crowd, but he's also locked in a different way that he's never been before, because I genuinely feel like he's also coming in thinking, I can really win this.
Yeah.
Like, all the way to the end. Confidently, he's different. On the grounds, even he's walking around the grounds, he's different. But on the court especially, he just has a complete different energy and mentality completely. So I really feel like Popperin went in thinking, yeah, I'm facing an American. We know how he is. He's just going to focus on giving a show. Tiafoe's not fucking giving a show right now. He's focused on winning this shit and going. And luckily, he plays good, really good tennis. So yeah, it gives a show to the people, and the people are all excited.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, don't understand. Actually, if you want to keep underestimating my guy, you go ahead. We can win this thing.
Do you feel like underestimated?
I mean, I don't know if specifically he underestimated him. I really do, you know, again, I'm watching it on a TV. I did just get the vibe that he just wasn't...
It wasn't the same as Djokovic.
It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't.
And this is what I'm saying, because And I get it. It probably won't be the same because when you're facing Djokovic, you're thinking, this is the life of my match. This is my match of my life. Sorry. And it's, and I mean, there's some people, their biggest accomplishment is either beating one of the big threes or beating Serena and so on. So I can understand it. But that's why it goes back to my point of saying, like, if you... You will want to keep the same level, but I kind of feel like a lot of people will be like, oh, I better joke. Oh, Francis, yeah, he's just going to focus on being, you know, Francis on the court. No. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he didn't bring that Novak energy to this where he probably should have.
At all. And it's not like Novak whooped him. Like, he made him so tired for him to be not coming with the same level. And he had enough time. Yeah, and he had enough time to rest on top of that. Do you get what I mean? So...
Yeah, I don't.
Shout out to Popper, anyways, but shout out to Big Fo.
we talked a little bit about coaches with Coco, so I just wanted to ask you guys, what do you think? Do you think this is a David Witt effect as well, a little bit, or no?
100%. I mean, Eugene asked him at Wimbledon, because during Wimbledon, he didn't have a coach. You know, he asked him about, you know, his whole coaching situation, and he did say, hey, I'm not trying to just pick anyone just... Anyhow, maybe he's learned from his mistake from him getting coached by what's his name again? No, it was the Hispanic guy.
Yes.
Starts with a P.
Which was a very interesting pick.
Yeah.
I remember when they announced it and he said, oh yes, this was my coach from when I was a junior and younger, and I thought, but you're you know, more mature now. But I think at the time he was looking for, which he's actually said, I think I read a quote that he said where he likes David Witt's energy and vibe. I think Tiafo is someone who goes off of vibes a lot and how
he feels. Diego Moyano.
Yes.
That was his name, yeah.
And how, you know, he needs to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And okay, and that he's heard and listened to, it seems like, to me anyway.
But he did say that because I think I asked him about that, like his, one of his, what's it like, the second round or something like that. Mm-hmm. I did ask him, like, hey, like, you came into, you know, you've been playing really well with David and everything. And he did say, like, you know, we get along well. We're on the same page. We know how to communicate. And it was interesting him giving David, because David's background is mainly WTA players. We're talking about Venus, we're talking about Pegula, Sakari. So it was interesting that, you know, he decided to go with someone who's mainly been focusing on the women's, you know, type of game. And yeah, whatever, their partnership is clearly working, because prior to that, it was actually quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. And now look where we're going. So, no, honestly, I think that partnership has definitely helped a lot. You have that, and you have already the fact that he loves playing here. It's a win-win situation, to be honest. So, yeah, no, 100%. But, yeah, I mean, he is going really far. You know, he is now probably, well, he did get his compliment, which it was funny because he was surprised when, you know, he was asked, like, you know, how he feels about being one of the favorites and stuff now with Djokovic being now and his after, you know, winning his Shelton match and stuff. But yeah, he was asked about that and how he feels about that. And this is what he had to say.
I appreciate the compliment. They think I'm one of the favorites. I wasn't really thinking about it like that. I'm more just... Obviously, Novak out. To be honest with you, like, Alexi's been playing unbelievable. He's won a Masters Series. They played three. This is the third time playing a slam this year. You know, Alexi's gotten sets off him. You know, Novak just, you know, won Olympics. It wasn't, you know, for me being a tennis guy, it wasn't the most surprising thing in the world. Obviously, you know, being Novak is a huge win at any point, any time, no matter, you know, where, when. But, I kind of feel like Lexi had that level, and he showed it tonight. It was a really, really high level. So, I had to come up with great stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not really looking like, favorites and things like that. I'm just day by day, literally. Recovery days, I'm focusing on that. You know, once match day comes and you start kind of focusing on the match, you know, Grand Slams, 2 weeks, you know, a lot going on. Can't get ahead of yourself and, you know, look on what could happen, things shaking out. Everyone's good, so it doesn't really matter who's in or who's not.
But, I'm really glad that he's saying that he's not really focusing too much on the favorite things, because I feel like that can put pressure on you. So yeah, again, it just shows to you that he's really just focused on himself.
And I thought it was also interesting how, yeah, he kind of said, he wasn't that surprised when, or by Alexei Popperin beating Djokovic, because mm-hmm. he was like, yeah, like Popperin's, he's got the level, like, and he's shown that mm-hmm. winning Montreal. I think he won Montreal.
Yes, he did.
Coming in. So, and that was his first Masters event. Like, and for me too, shouts out to Popperin, but like, again, because that win, that's going to put a lot of guys, like, I guess, on notice to say, you know what? If Popperin can go and win a Masters 1000, like, so can I.
Yeah.
And beat Djokovic after. And I love how during Tiafoe's press, not like, he literally even said, like, beating one of the top, it doesn't matter whether it's now, whether it was 20 years ago, whether, like, it's still a big thing, especially that Djokovic, like, we know, like, he's still a tough opponent. It doesn't matter whether he's 37, 27, 7, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So, yeah, like, I think Popperin should definitely still be proud of himself.
Right, 100%, yeah, and he will be. And, like, obviously the Australian Open's the next Grand Slam now. Like, that's going to, he's played himself well into form there, like most likely be seeded for that, and obviously being a home slam, like, God knows how far he can go in that. So he's had a good tournament and a good, like, US summer, so I'm sure he'll be pretty pleased with, like, his level and, like, kind of his achievements in New York. Like, what did you make of Popperin?
I think it's great. He is someone who, he came up on the scene kind of, I think it was like after Alex de Minaur, and I think Leighton Hewitt, he kind of gathers these male Australian players because I think, kind of like Andy Roddick, he's waiting for one of them to make a big jump as well. So he was someone who I spotted early, but then he didn't really do anything. So this is actually quite, I mean, it's actually shocking. I'm like, because last year in Canada, Popperin, I think he won two matches and that was it, and people were talking about him a little bit, but and come this year he wins the title. So it's nice to see. He seems like a good kid. Excited to see where he goes from here. But
I love the embrace as well at the net.
Yes,
like, clearly have, like, mutual respect for each other, which I love. And he, Popperin, did say in his press that, yeah, like, TFO is playing just lights out, like, at some stages, like, it was difficult for him to kind of keep up, and that is kind of ultimately why TFO ended up getting the win. So yeah, just a really entertaining match, and we are very, very happy to see TFO make it to the last day. I'm looking forward to that Dimitrov match. What are your predictions, Lucy, for that? Putting you on the spot again.
It's going to be a battle.
Definitely a scrap.
I have Francis. Hold on. How has Dimitrov been playing? Because I've not really been looking at...
That win against Rublev is huge.
So he's been rotted. He's been actually been... His last match was 5 sets. Everything else been straight sets. But then again, when you're looking at who he's been playing... Yeah, I have Francis in... I don't know, 4 or 5. I can't decide.
Okay. Do I break my... I don't know. Like, here's what I... It's going to be an entertaining match.
Wait, so you think there's chances of Dimitrov beating...
Yeah. Oh, I mean... But Dimitrov has had a great year.
Yeah, no,
he's
no.
He's had
yes.
a little
true,
bit
true,
of
true,
resurgence.
True.
I would say it's like he changed everything. He changed his hair. He changed his clothing. He changed his shoes. And then he was a new player. I think it's going to be a battle. Like, Francis cannot come in there with
their
any level dip or anything like that. Ooh, their head-to-head
is... So their head-to-head is 3-1 to Dimitrov.
Interesting. I didn't even know that. What are the years?
I remember that. You at the Australian Open 2019, that win. Because TFO, that was on his birthday, he beat him.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that was pretty big.
Yeah. I just do think it will be an entertaining battle.
Yeah.
And I will be there watching it.
For me, I'm going to say TFO again. And I feel like if TFO starts like how he started against Popperin, mm-hmm. I'm going to say 3 sets. Because I think the energy of the crowd as well. Like, I feel like he's so locked in this year, more so than last year. and even more so than the semi-final run he made the year before that when he lost to Alcaraz.
Yeah.
Because he's a better player now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's not just a better player. Like, he's more experienced. Like, and just he knows how to kind of deal with the moments or the big moments. So yeah, I'm going all in on TFO, man. I'm all in.
I'm going on TFO, but not straight sets. I think it's going to be either 4 or 5.
Yeah, I think even if TFO wins it, I mean, straight sets will be tough against Dimitrov. I think. Okay.
Well, we shall see. We're going to be right there.
I know.
Front row, you know, watching it and being ready for a match. I wonder if Serena is going to pull up again.
Is she going to root for a bro?
Or she rooting for Dimitrov? Let's see. But aside from that, we have day 8 tomorrow, where we have a very, 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 very entertaining match. And our only singles match that we have, that side of the draw, we only have our one player, the Italian Ghanaian queen, Jasmine Paolini, against Carolina Mukova on Louis Armstrong. They're opening Louis Armstrong. Anastasia, we've already talked about what we think about that match, but how do you think that match is going to go?
What do you mean of Paolini's run as well?
I've never seen anything like it. I don't think anyone has seen anything like this. The way... And I know she's given interviews and, you know, people ask her, what changed? She hadn't gone past the first round of the U.S. Open. And here she is now. And, you know, she says it's all mental for her, which I'm just like, wow, maybe I should change my mentality because, you know, just get a little bit of what Paulie is getting. You know, my life will be so much better. But her run, and for everyone, so... My introduction to Paolini was your podcast.
Thank you.
Black Spin Global. Like, that's how I found out who she was. Because, first of all, I wouldn't have known she was Ghanaian.
Yeah.
By just looking at
her. Yeah, yeah.
But you had done the research. You knew. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. Let me follow her. And it was fun following her. Every time she played, I was like, this is really great. And then this rise this year, 2 Grand Slam finals.
It's crazy.
A gold medal, come on.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. I think what she's doing is great right now. And it's hard not, because every match, I remember when she was playing Rybakina, I think that was the French Open, and I was like, I don't know, Rybakina is so tall. She won it.
Yeah.
I can't even go into anything. So it's so funny, because with Frances Tiafoe, I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, with Paulie, I'm like, let's go. Mm-hmm. She's got it. Mm-hmm. Because I think coming into the match, everyone might think, oh, Mukova, the old Mukova that everyone remembers is coming back, who's a really tough, you know, player. Exactly, and all of that. But I'm like, have you met Jasmine Paolini?
Exactly.
Oh, she's so good.
Too good.
She's so good. Her energy, she makes me love tennis even more.
Yes, that's it.
You know, so I'm excited. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be watching that match first on Louis Armstrong.
Nice.
In person.
Yes.
Because I just love watching her
play. Is that your first time watching her in person?
No.
Oh, no, you saw her last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. I've seen her in person a few times now, luckily. Okay. Yeah. But
And it's just fantastic,
she's just
right?
Fantastic.
Like, it's just I'm telling you, what you see on TV from Paolini is not the same.
It's not the same.
In person, I remember the first ever time I watched her was Eastbourne. I was like, wait, hold on. I know she knows how to hit, but damn, like, yeah. This is crazy. How do you think so you have her winning this match?
Yes.
Straight sets or 3 sets?
3.
Yeah,
3.
I said the same
3.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm going to say 3 as well. Paolini, I think she's going to get it done. So, yeah, we look forward to that on day 8. But before we close, we need to shout out some juniors. So, Akasha Ohobo, American.
Okay.
Actually Nigerian. So her dad actually represented Nigeria. He's actually her coach.
No way.
His name's TJ, yeah. So she got a good win tonight. I was actually watching most of her match. She played a girl from Lithuania, I believe, and won that 6-1, 6-1. And Ohobo, she also played first round qualies. Lost to Priscilla Hahn. the Australian in three sets.
Oh, that's interesting. She played qualies and now she's in the junior tournament.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
I mean, she's 17, so I think she got a wild card into qualies.
Oh, perfect.
For the,
oh, wow.
For the
that's great.
So yeah, she's through to the second round. Also, Tyra Grant, who's the third seed, she's also through, as well as Matthew Forbes, who also played main draw men's. He got a good win today as well. And another name we haven't been, well, a new name for us, Christasha McNeil. No relation to Laurie McNeil, I've been told. But yeah, they're all through, all Americans, through to the second round in the juniors. So we'll be looking out for them. And then in the women's doubles, we did have Taylor Townsend and Katerina Siniakova facing off against Heather Watson and Asia Muhammad. And that was a three-setter.
Yeah.
And both of you saw a bit of that.
I watched a bit of that because it was, I think I was waiting for the match. I was waiting for Kirker to come on. So I went to watch like a set and a half and I was just like, wait, it was really, really high quality. But they were all fighting through and it was just nice seeing all of them. I think for me, it was also nice seeing Watson pumped up like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I knew it was going to be tough, especially that, you know, Taylor and Siniakova. And I kind of feel like now the doubles people that are playing doubles are now playing their best against Townsend and Siniakova, because I think it's been kind of tough for them, like, ever since their first round. Mm-hmm. I think all of their matches, or probably even one, did not go into three sets. I think all of them have. So, if I'm correct, but either way, they've been fighting through. So now it's like, people know that, oh, okay, they, first of all, they know Siniakova is the doubles queen.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's done it all. Do you get what I mean? So, when you see her already as a doubles, you know, player, you're like, oh, shoot. And then now they just won Wimbledon and, you know, they're all playing, you know, really well and stuff. So yeah, that match was very entertaining.
Yeah.
What did you make,
Ben? So I'd never seen Asia Muhammad play in person. Okay. Wow. Okay. Her serving. Then Heather Watson, like, she's just little fighter. And I loved seeing that.
That's what I'm saying.
And
yeah.
So here's what I'm gonna say. Mm-hmm. If you have a ticket to a tournament, go see doubles.
Yeah.
Go watch these women.
It was full.
Play.
The stadium was full.
It was packed.
Full. It was actually packed.
Townsend, she does draw a crowd.
She does. Oh, yeah. I feel 20, like her win since Wimbledon has really, and then,
and
you know, her
she's
heart.
She's very popular in America.
No, she's very popular. Yeah. I feel like, no, I generally feel like the Wimbledon win got her even more popular, honestly speaking.
I'm not saying she doesn't or she didn't before.
I'm just saying
It made it way bigger
because I've seen Taylor, you know, before in person, and it's like, I'm not saying the crowd was there, but when she's been playing doubles with Daniel Young and here, and all you hear is, let's go Taylor.
Yeah.
Let's go Taylor. Young has been about since. Anyway, talking about Young. And they're all there like, go Taylor. You mainly see like the older crowd, you know, saying, yeah, go Young and everything. But like, there were so many other players out there. Watson has been about for a while. Muhammad has been playing really well. I mean, she's won titles before in doubles as well. You know, Siniakova is, as I said, is a champ. She plays really well. But yeah, all you hear is Taylor. But I'm with you. People need to go watch doubles, especially when during these times. But yeah, it was nice and fulfilling to see how packed it was. But most importantly, such a great match. And I just realized we're literally just right next to it.
Yes. we're recording right next to it.
Yeah. Shout out to the girls, honestly. Yeah. Ladies that have been playing really well. But yeah.
What's on the agenda for you tomorrow, Anastasia?
Well, definitely starting with Paolini and Mukova. And I might just stay on Louis Armstrong tomorrow. I mean, no, I'm going to go watch Donald Young and Taylor. They're playing tomorrow. It's just been fun watching them. The photos that you were complimenting me on were watching them. But so I'll see that. We'll see. Well, maybe we'll keep it an early day on the grounds. You know, what time is it now? It's almost 1:30.
Oh, gosh. We have to be back here in 10 hours.
It. Dedication.
It's a full job.
It is.
Anastasia, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me. It's been so awesome watching what you do and the work you do, because it is work. But it's so... just highlighting these players that nobody else does is so important. I can't remember what I was listening to. I was like getting ready. That's when I listened to my podcast. I was getting ready and I was listening to you guys talk and I was just like, nobody talks like this. Nobody talks about these players. And I'm just so happy that you both exist.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm so happy we got to meet in person as well.
Yes, sure. Finally, we did it.
Yeah. So we look forward to having you on another episode. Probably after the US Open now, because
don't let me and Lucy together. We'll just have another 2 hour long podcast.
I mean, we need to wrap up because the battery is about to die on my laptop. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for tapping in, and yeah, we look forward to catching you up on day 8 tomorrow. So yeah, stay locked in.